Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer alongside my co-host Evan Ryer. It is No Sleep Teal. And when I say I'm remote today, Evan, well, as you can see, I am, in fact, remote. But we've got a lot to get into on the program. Very interesting week for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Coming back from London, taking on a very good Green Bay Packers team. Ev, the feeling inside Everbank Stadium on Sunday after coming back, after the self-inflicted wounds, after the injuries, to tie that game and then see, as you pretty much called it last week, the Brandon McManus revenge game, to see that guy drill it from short range to take care of the Jags. Not surprising, but not any less heartbreaking too.
Yeah, that was a tough one, especially since I don't think, you know, I think really offensively that was another decent performance at the very least. The offensive line continues to do a pretty solid job overall. You know, the play that sticks out the worst, obviously, is the fumble in your own 20. That's a tough one. But, you know, I thought Trevor was decent again. Again, that offensive line was solid. I can't really say it's their fault. You know, I as much as I would say that, I mean, you know, Jordan Love goes out, you kind of want your defense to be able to maybe take control of that game, and they just didn't. You know, I know Josh Jacobs is very good. You know, we know that well. But he was kind of getting whatever he wanted, and then to have Malik Willis, of all people, kind of, you know, in your season in so many ways. I mean, you know, I think the Jaguars season was kind of already over, but if you win that game, I said it last week, if you win that game, you know, you're, you know, two games in a row, you play an Eagles team that's not invincible, but now you're 2-6. You know, I think it's over at this point.
Yeah, the fallout from the game, kind of that narrative around Duval, certainly this week in the aftermath of the Packers nipping the Jags last Sunday, it certainly has had that feel. It's almost felt inevitable in the weeks leading up to this to begin with.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely feels more real right now. And so, you know, you said there were moments in that game against the Packers where you, if you thought the Jags were of playoff caliber in terms of roster and quarterback, you were right. But there were also moments where if you didn't feel that way about certain areas of this football team, you were right too. We've heard Doug Peterson, we hear football coaches talk about it a lot these days. It seems like complementary football, right? Offense, defense, special teams sort of working in unison, helping each other, complementary football. The Jags are complimentary in the way about they go losing football games, because I thought the defense, especially early in the game, was exactly what the Jags needed it to be, with this offense struggling again out of the gates. Didn't get their first down until about halfway through the second quarter, Evan. Yeah. Jarian Jones with a hell of an interception there in the first half. So defense was good early, wasn't good late at all. And then in between it, the offense sort of picked it up. And, you know, Trevor with the interception deep on his own end, the fumble, as you referred to, inside the 10, that's 14 points directly. Now, you know, you can look at that and say that all goes on Trevor in the offense. But you know what? You still had a chance to play defense. Now, if you give up the football at your own 5, I'm not going to critique the defense much, if at all. But if you give it up inside your own 30, you still have a chance to force a field goal, and the defense wasn't able to do that. So, again, I think you can go back to really offense, defense. Special teams are good enough. Cam Little with a big kick later in that game. Logan Cook with an all-pro performance on Sunday. But offensively, defensively, they don't help each other at all, it doesn't seem like, on a weekly basis.
No, it's, you know, you think about, you know, the successful teams that the Jaguars have had in the past decade, and even that 2022 team, you know, it felt like while that defense wasn't great, they were really good at forcing, you know, getting takeaways, you know, at least giving the offense short fields to work with. You know, the Jaguars were, you know, Jarian Jones was able to get that interception, but the offense wasn't able to capitalize on it. And then when the offense was performing well, you know, the defense, you know, couldn't show up. It's like when the defense was getting a break, you know, they talk about all the time, you know, well, okay, let's see if we can at least get a couple first downs and, you know, keep the defense on the sideline to be able to rest. It seemed like that didn't do anything for the defense. If anything, they fell asleep when the Jaguars offense was driving down the field. Because, you know, every single time it seems like when the Jaguars would score in that second half, you know, that second drive of the second half, they score a touchdown. The Packers respond with, you know, a long drive of their own. And then, you know, that's, you know, when you, right after that is when Trevor fumbled. But yeah, it's just, it's frustrating to watch because, you know, you, even when they were, you know, really starting to get it together, they take, you know, their first kind of lead of the game, you know, it's still, you know, you were anticipating what we're talking about of, well, the mistakes and the lack of complimentary football. And essentially that's what happened. I do think a lot of that, you know, while there's something to be said about player execution and different things, I really do think that a lot of that is, you know, coaching. You know, and in many ways, you know, especially with how the Jaguars scored with, you know, a minute 45 on the clock after they tied it up.
Right.
That felt like terrible game management in my eyes. You know, I know you have to get down the field and score to tie that game up, but at the same time, I mean, they didn't do anything to really try and get their defense a chance, you know, in terms of time remaining. And then Ryan Nielsen's kind of approach to defending on the drive that led to the game-winning field goal, not exactly inspiring either.
Well, it was set up perfectly, man, and give the Packers a lot of credit because Malik Willis is in the game. You're thinking if you're the Jags, especially after the first down run on that final possession for the Packers, hey, they're just going to probably try to pound this thing. And if they break one with Jacobs, then maybe they'll take some chances. But it almost felt like the Packers were willing at that point to go to overtime. But all it really was a setup. That first down run, it got the Jags into the mindset of let's load up this box with eight or nine guys. Let's get our safety up in there sniffing around. Essentially ran play action off of the run to Jacobs on the previous snap. And Andre Sisco in no man's land, you know, up there, eyes not where they need to be. I know he cramped, but I think he cramped because he was trying to recover, right? If he was in position to make that coverage what it needed to be, perhaps he doesn't cramp. But when you are in an oh shit moment, you know, your body may not respond the way your brain would like it to, especially at the end of a long physical football game. And so it was a tough matchup, I think, for Sisco regardless. But, boy, a lot of credit, too, to the Packers. And you're right, the Jags got played there. I don't think there's any better way to put it.
Yeah, that was, you know, when they scored and it was like a minute 40 or whatever it was on the clock, I was thinking, I was like, yeah, that's a lot of time. You know, the Packers will probably.
I told people you know very well that were sitting with me. It's a lot of time. And like you said, they were in a hurry, it seemed like, even though they were in the red zone. I was like, they don't really need to be in this big of a hurry. They've got time here for, you know, a full sequence of four snaps, if that's what they need. And then some. Like, they had plenty of time. And so we were synced up, Ev, I think, in terms of what we were thinking there.
Well, to put it in perspective, I mean, it was, you know, Trevor was dealing and it was working. So there's something to be said there. But they did not run the ball once on that touchdown drive. Every single play was a pass. And, you know, like I just, you know, especially after you get to like the Green Bay 14, it's a 2-minute warning. You know, I personally am thinking, okay, let's at least run the ball on this first play. Let's at least, you know, we've got all the time in the world. You know, we only have to go 14 yards to get this touchdown. If we don't get the touchdown, we lose. Right. You know, I mean, it's, but you're 2-5. Like, I think you kind of have to, maybe they were not anticipating that. Maybe they were thinking that it was going to be less successful than it was. But, yeah, just a tough look in that sense. And then, you know, it is what it is. Again,
not a situation they're used to either at the end of games, unfortunately. You know, when you really think about it, yes, they've lost some close games, but it hasn't had the feel that the Jaguars were on the doorstep of winning late in games, especially on offense. And yeah, there's some perspectives I'm sure you have to take into account. One of them being at that particular time, you didn't have any of your top three receivers on the field. I mean, you were rolling Parker Washington, you were rolling Tim Jones, and you were rolling two tight ends. Now, look, that's where Evan Ingram's value is immense, because we all know he's essentially a wide receiver in a lot of cases. And what a catch, too, by Evan Ingram. Yeah, that was some Matrix-ish stuff, the way he elevated and just sort of maintained it to make that grab in the end zone.
No, that was maybe, you know, the best play I've seen from Evan Ingram. And he's had some very good plays over the years for the Jags, but that was probably the best play. And really, you know, again, a perfect ball from Trevor. I mean, he puts it in the one spot that the ball has to go. I was very, very impressed with that in general. And, you know, I you know, kind of after it happened, I was like, you know, the defense, I was trying to convince myself that the defense was going to show up.
Right.
Because they, you know, it had some good performances earlier in the game. I was really hoping that that would be maybe Jarian Jones's moment. But, you know, when Cisco falls down and they pick up 40 yards on a single play, it just kind of becomes, well, that's kind of that.
It did. And, you know, look, you're still not getting enough pressure on quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And you know what you've got in the secondary right now anyway. And then sort of the fallout from this game. In the last 24 hours, we've seen Cam Robinson traded to the Minnesota Vikings. Wanted your thoughts on that. Sensible is the word that comes to mind for me. I'm not sure about you.
No, I think that's the right move. You know, Walker Little has done fairly well in his chances this year. And really, you're hitting a point where Cam Robinson's at the end of his contract. Yeah. You're going to cash out. You've got to. And, you know, more than likely with Christian Darrisaw being out, as long as Cam Robinson stays healthy and plays the rest of the season, that won't just be a fifth round pick. That will be a fourth round pick based on my understanding of the trade.
Yep.
So fourth round pick for a guy that, you know, really hasn't been as good as you wanted, who was probably going to leave anyways. You know, I do think that that's a smart deal, and you get to really, really, you know, give Walker Little a chance. You say, you know, hey man, these next, you know, seven games or nine games or whatever, this is, you know, your opportunity to prove that you're the tackle we want to build on going forward. So I think that makes sense. And in fact, I would, you know, if they find any other offers for some of the veterans on this team, I kind of am in a place where I'm saying, you know, go ahead and fire sale. You know, don't, you know, give away dudes for nothing, but, you know, it might not be a bad opportunity to kind of look at some of the younger guys on the squad, and give them more opportunities, you know, because yeah, it's kind of over, you know, if Christian Kirk hadn't gotten injured, which that really stunk, you know, that he broke his collarbone.
Gone for the year.
I think he was a name that was being listed as a trade candidate by a lot of reporters around the country. I think they probably would have shopped him around. Even so, with him injured, let's get, you know, some of these practice squad guys like Elijah Cooks, maybe what we've got in the cupboard.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I'd rather see their skills than anything else.
Yeah, it's rough. And look, it could change the whole dynamic with Christian Kirk since he's not tradable. You know, he's done for the year. Perhaps he ends up being a Jaguar moving forward. Maybe not. Then you think about, right, what that offense was able to do in 12 personnel with two tight ends on the field there late. Very impressive. Trevor seemed very comfortable in that approach. I'm not going to say it's a blessing, because if you're without Brian Thomas Jr. also this week, that can't be a good thing. Look, you've got some guys that can play inside. You've got Parker Washington, who I thought did some nice things late in that game against the Packers. So
absolutely.
Feel okay about the slot, but what you don't have if Brian Thomas Jr. can't go is a legit vertical threat. I like Elijah Cooks' size if you end up bringing him up from the practice squad, but the explosiveness of this offense undoubtedly would take a hit. You talk about other guys, trade deadlines next Tuesday. I mean, you thinking Travis Etienne at this point? Is he still on your radar? He's a guy that's been talked about a lot by you and other folks. You know, and you think about maybe some other guys that could be on the move.
Yeah, I think Etienne for the right offer could go, but I think the Jaguars, I mean, they really do like him. I mean, every single aspect or in every single step of the his NFL career, they've been very, very much, you know, supportive. Even when he was going down earlier this season, Doug over and over and over said, you know, no, we're not making Bigsby the starter. Etienne will always be the starter if he's healthy. So I'll be curious to see what that is. I would say it's kind of a coin flip. You know, if they got like a really nice offer for him, I think you got to take it. But I don't think that they're just going to let him walk for, you know, basically nothing. You also still wonder if, you know, in this next weekend, if there's a quarterback that goes down. You know, we talked about Mac Jones potentially getting traded somewhere. I think that could still happen if an NFL team loses a quarterback this weekend. And then defensively, I could see somebody like, I don't know, I could see somebody like Chad Muma getting moved. You know, I don't know what they would really get for him.
Yeah.
But I don't think you've seen anything from him that really keeps him around. And then I would even maybe say Devon Hamilton. Devon Hamilton comes to mind as like another defender that could potentially move. I mean, I know they're already thin on the defensive line, but really, you know, you take draft resources at this stage of, you know, a lost season.
The departure of Roy Robertson Harris a few weeks ago was interesting because I think the thought process from us and others was, okay, well, here comes Mason Smith. We're going to see a lot of the second round pick. That really hadn't been the case, though. So if you move another interior or defensive lineman type, maybe that's what gets him more involved. Obviously, there's something going on that is leading to him not being the factor that we thought he would be, especially after Roy was sent packing to Seattle. But there's a lot of moving pieces, no doubt about it. And it really takes away from the week-to-week part of it in season. I mean, you got to go to Philly on Sunday. Enjoy that, right? Yeah. I mean, we saw firsthand what Buffalo is like on the road. Philly has a reputation that extends, or I guess you could say dives below that of even Philadelphia. So doesn't get any easier this week. Really, the next few weeks, you're in a gauntlet right now, and it's not a good place to be, especially with the injuries.
No, it's going to be pretty brutal, at least as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Philly on the road, they've kind of found it. The Eagles are looking closer to the team we thought they would be at the beginning of last season before their collapse, similar to what happened to the Jaguars. And then, Vikings and Lions after that, good luck. You know, we'll be seeing Cam Robinson.
Texans soon. Down the road, too, coming back
Texans
around.
After that. And then
with a healthy Joe Mixon this time. You know?
It's crazy because the last five games of the season are maybe the five easiest games of the season that they're going to play.
You make the run to 7-10, baby.
But that's what's funny is that you could be dealing with this right now. Right. And if you can just beat the Dolphins and the Browns to start the year,
you're just 4-4. Right now,
you can kind of weather the storm and potentially enter a final stretch that similar to 2022, you just win and you can still maybe get the wild card or something. But no, I mean, it's not going to be pretty, especially this next month. November is brutal. You know, like I said, really at this point this year, but that's the thing is like, we don't have any, Doug is gone. You know, it feels like Doug Peterson will not be the coach of the Jaguars next season, but you have no idea with Trent Baalke. You know, Shad continues to say all this stuff.
Trent's making moves for 2026 picks.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's like, and Shad's comment after the London game or during the London game or whatever, when he was like, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. is a star. And what that tells me is that we're drafting really well. Well, Shad, I don't know if we actually are, but I'm glad that we, you know, nailed the kind of,
hey, there are a lot of assumptions being made. I don't have any intel on this. I don't think anybody does right now. I'm just telling you, I won't be surprised if there's more of a retention with this current structure than maybe some folks are anticipating. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's what Shad, the thing is if you look at the history, Shad has basically cleaned house twice ever.
And that's still more than Jerry Jones. I mean, we talk about Shad, but hell, he's not alone in all this in the National Football League.
But, you know, I don't know if pointing at Jerry is like, oh, well, we're fine.
Well, no, I'm not pointing at a masterclass.
Yeah, I know.
On organizational leadership for sure. But I'm just saying, you know,
when Shad bought the team, it was a clean house that came in because it has to be with the new owner. And then I guess after the Gus Bradley era, the Gus Bradley, Dave Caldwell era, he kind of cleaned house completely. And when he did that, the Jaguars proceeded to make the playoffs for the first time in his tenure. Yeah. So Shad, I would hope that you see that, you know, getting a new regime at least gives you a better chance. But F it, man. Let's stick with Balky, who is infamous among coaches in the NFL. You know, infamous for being a guy who pushes out coaches. You know, at least that's the story from his days with the 49ers. And, you know, and you know, I mean, there's rumors of that happening right now, that him and Doug basically have been going at each other's throats all season. Again, rumors, not confirmed reports. We don't have any inside intel. But
scuttlebutt.
You know, we talk about the Mason Smith thing. And, you know, I said this earlier in the year that the understanding that I had been seeing was that Doug thinks Mason Smith is a jobber, but Trent Baalke loves him. And so Doug has, you know, when Mason Smith was being declared a healthy scratch in week three or so, that was Doug trying to send a message to the front office. Yeah. But who knows? Again, this is all kind of, you know, stuff that, you know, we can't
making
really
the rounds. Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's stuff to consider. It's going to be tough. You know, when you talk about this Eagles game, you know, it's almost a fun puzzle trying to think of how can the Jaguars win this game?
Well, you did a good job against Josh Jacobs last week. So Saquon Barkley ought to be.
Should be fine.
Right. You feel good about that defensively right out the gate, right?
Yeah, I honestly do approach this game thinking, I mean, I know the secondary is terrible, but I want Jalen Hurts throwing for 400 yards if they're going to beat us. You know what I mean? That is, at the end of the day, Jalen Hurts' weaker side of his game still in my eyes. He is a good passer, but, you know, you can't – if you let, you know, Saquon and Jalen Hurts kind of just run for whatever they want, you're never going to have a chance anyways. No. I feel like if you're forcing the ball down the field from Hurts, you might be able to, you know, pick off a couple passes here and there. Devontae Smith has been playing really well the past 2 weeks, but I mean, he's Devontae Smith. It is what it is. I think that's got to be your approach. And then conversely, offensively, without, you know, some of these top receivers, I want, you know, if Etienne's healthy, I want to see Etienne and Bigsby in the backfield together sometimes. Oh, yeah. I want to see a lot of just, you know, working that, like Evan Engram crossers,
Etienne, two tight ends, kind of two backs, yeah.
RPO type stuff. Like, I really do think that, honestly, you have to run a bit of the Eagles offense.
I did like that last week in the red zone when essentially Trevor was called running to run the football.
Yeah.
Run the football when he got in with some assistance from his friends. I think they've got to have more of that. They complain or they struggle with those red zone opportunities. I know he's not Josh Allen, okay? But I know he's a good enough athlete that he can keep on a lot of these when you're getting stuffed for nothing at the two or the three. and maybe have a chance, not on third down, not on fourth down, but first or second down, have him keep the football. And maybe that helps you with your red zone issues or your short yardage issues in general.
Something I need to go verify, so bear with me on this, but something I saw this past weekend talking about Trevor's fumbling, while as a runner, I believe the stat said that of all those like 20-something fumbles that he's had in his NFL career, only two have come while he is a runner.
Running the football.
Right. And yeah. I wonder sometimes if he doesn't run or if the Jaguars try not to run him because they think of the fumbling issues. But really, it doesn't seem to be a problem when he's tucking it and going.
He's got more issues in terms of pocket awareness.
Yeah.
And navigational skills. That's when he exposes the football more.
I will say.
Than he does on the move. Yeah.
Navigational skills. He did basically do, on that touchdown, he basically did do the thing we complained about like weeks ago when he ran into Mitch Morrison as for Cleveland. I mean, he basically, there's like open space on either side and he just goes directly into the scuttle because he just can't. He can't. He's not a mover and shaker.
Not that guy, pal.
And that's okay. But like you said, if you're a good enough athlete, you're at least getting up the field and you're able to give yourself a chance.
Yes.
That's all we're asking for, really.
Give Trev a chance. That's all we're asking.
But this is a game where really, due to having their hands tied behind their back and also kind of how the matchup works, the Jaguars need to get pretty physical with their approach on offense. I mean, I want to see a lot of
Tank's got to have a game. And Brenton Strange, you mentioned here, he's been a real positive. And you want to talk about a draft pick that's looking a lot better than it did 12 months ago. That's Brenton Strange.
Yeah, for sure. We have to own up on that because I don't think me or you really had much optimism for him during training camp or anything like that. We kind of said over and over again, you know, we're not really sure what he's bringing to the table, especially, you know, considering how high they drafted him. I love what he is right now. I love having him as a complement to Evan Ingram. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think our tight end group is actually maybe, you know, other than the wide receiver group when healthy, you know, maybe the strongest part of the offense. Because I also like Luke Farrell and I like Degara too. And then defensively, you know, this is, you know, we talk about what you can do against this. This is a game where, you know, you talk about.
This is a Foyer and Ventrell kind of game.
Yeah, this is linebackers. That's literally what it's about.
Quarterback, running back, run linebackers. Game.
Absolutely. This is Oklahoma drills type stuff. You gotta go find Barkley wherever he is and try to make that play, which is not easy. It's gonna be tough, but that's gonna be the only way you can really do it. I wonder, you know, the Jaguars pass rush is not good. I don't think you necessarily have to get home on Jalen Hurts. I don't think you want to push him out of the pocket a lot.
Rush him and make him stand in there and throw the football down the field.
Allen and Walker need to be kind of playing contain on that. And if anything, this is, you know, I mean, like I said Devon Hamilton could be getting traded, but this is a game where, you know, you kind of hope Devon Hamilton's getting a sack here because interior pass rush is going to be a big deal. Not that the Jaguars are good at that. Cough, cough, Eric Armstead. Which I actually
you got to play him at end, you know?
Yeah.
I thought
Eric Armstead actually played pretty okay last weekend. I'll give him some credit in that Green Bay game, but yeah, I mean, I'm still waiting to see it with him. It's going to be a tough ask.
You know,
there's a reason.
I don't know if I'd be shocked if the Jags went on the road and beat Philly, but I'd be damn well surprised.
Yeah, I would say this would be more surprising.
My fear is Buffalo, the sequence is my fear going into it.
Absolutely. It's very well possible that they get down two scores early and, you know, especially, I mean, that's a demoralizing loss to the Packers. That's kind of the latest in the gut punches. I feel like the Jaguars had avoided some gut punches in recent weeks.
Right.
You know, that Bears loss was depressing, but it wasn't like you kind of let a game get away from you.
They were just easily better.
Yeah. This is a game where, you know, you're coming off a week where if you were going to save your season, that was it. You were playing a team that's better than you, and you still let them off the hook.
Yeah.
I could see them kind of being deflated.
Right.
But I will say, I made a joke about it last week. Jaguars got flexed out of Sunday Night Football for Colts Vikings.
Yeah.
Or I believe it's Colts Vikings. I know it's the Colts. Joe Flacco. The Colts?
Yeah.
Joe Flacco, Sunday Night Football. Hey, NBC, are you sure you wanted to watch Joe Flacco and the Colts over?
Well, he's so old, it's going to be past his bedtime, too. Like,
yeah.
You know, flexing out Flacco. You know, that puts Paw out there a little late on Sunday night. I don't know if he's used to that.
That is like the first Sunday Night Football game of the year that I probably won't watch at all. I mean,
I'll watch it. Yeah.
I mean, that is a worse matchup to me. I feel like Jaguars Eagles on paper
it's not great.
More entertaining setup, but whatever. I guess I don't understand it. And really, when you're 2-6 and as bad as the Jaguars are, you can't complain about not getting on primetime broadcasts. No, so,
you cannot.
Looking
at big week coming up, as we know, we got an election of some sort.
Yeah, can't wait.
So get out and vote. I'm thinking maybe a write-in for Logan Cook and Cam Little.
Yeah.
Cook Little 2024. I'm trying to get that going maybe.
I would support that. I would support that.
Oh, we appreciate that. There's no doubt about it. We appreciate everybody tuning in, by the way. If you haven't subscribed to the channel as of yet, hit the subscribe button. Hit that notification bell. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. And a thumbs up. A like is always appreciated as well. Anything else, Ev, before we get out of here?
That's all I got.
That's all for Ev. That's all for me. And so, for Evan Ryer, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube for No Sleep Till. Until next week, so long, everybody.